Hi, everybody. Ron Alcoholic. I won't be needing this. I'd like to welcome anybody new, anybody coming back. Welcome to AA and our friends from out of town. Welcome. My sobriety date is November the 3rd, 1988. So I got 25 years and I'm coming up to 26 years. And, you know, that doesn't make me any more important than anybody sitting in these chairs. It really doesn't. And I kind of got tricked into this tonight or somehow because my sponsee was supposed to share, but couldn't make it. So I guess I had to step up to the plate. So it's just going to be a lot louder. You would be hearing somebody a lot quieter tonight, but for some fortunate reason, it's going to be a little louder and it'll be maybe crystal clear. Anyways, yeah, I got here a long time ago and I got here just like everybody else. I'm a Vancouver longshoreman and longshoremen are known to drink. And that's all I knew how to do is drink. So, Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't even know about Alcoholics Anonymous, but I knew how to drink, right? So, you know, I'd work on these ships, and I started when I was like 14 as a longshoreman. So here's these like great big forklifts and big ships filled with booze, and I fit right in. Really, I just fit right in perfectly there, you know? And the waterfront wasn't the waterfront it is today. It was really wild back then. And everything you could imagine that you heard about longshoremen's, it's true. And it did happen, and it did happen years and years ago. And I was part of that. And I didn't know what was going on with me because I would drink, and I would get so drunk. You know, I can remember drinking at work, and, you know, I can remember somebody bumping my feet. And he'd be bumping my feet, and I'm like, what? And I passed out. And I'm like, why are you waking me up? And it was my foreman. And he said, hey, why don't you just get up? And he says, let me show you how I found you. And we were like near all this lumber. And I passed out behind all this lumber. And I mean, I was hidden really well. But he knew I was there. And I'm like, how did you know, like, I'm here? So he says, follow me. So I walked around, and I walked around the lumber. And I came out to the front, and out the front of the lumber was a lumber load with a bottle of vodka and cups, and I had everything just right there, but I was missing. I was drunk, and I was passed out around the corner. You know, so this is how it happened. I mean, you know, I kind of quit school, like, really early. I became a longshoreman. I drank, and I didn't know what an alcoholic was, so I just kept on drinking, and then I learned how to drive these big machines because, you know, not only I wanted to drink, but I really didn't want to work that hard either, right? So I drove these big machines, and I could only drive these big machines if I had lots of booze with me. And, you know, that's just how life was for me. Life was about drinking at work. Life was about drinking after work. Life was just about drinking. So, you know, people who were sober at that time, I never hung out with them. Not once did I ever hang out with anybody who didn't drink. So that was my life, drinking. And I would get kicked out of everywhere I drank. I got kicked out if I'm a little loud. So, you know, can you imagine me drunk? Oh my God, this is sober. This is 25 years sober. When I was drunk, it was bad. So I got kicked out of all the bars, and I had to drink behind the alleys because I got kicked out of every bar I ever went to every single time. And back then, I don't know, it was a lot different back then than it is now. And, you know, I can remember drinking, and I can remember staggering home. And I wouldn't even make it home a lot of days because I was just too drunk. And I don't know if that ever happened to you, but it happened to me. And I had to go to the closest place for somewhere to hide. And where I hid and where I slept was in the school grounds. And a lot of these school grounds, there's these kid forts. So I'd be in these forts. And I'd be sleeping in these forts. And it's a good idea because there's cover and you could drink and you could pass out. But it wasn't a good thing in the morning when you hear kids screaming and said, you know, mommy, like, you know, who's this guy sleeping here? And it's like, oh my God, I wake up from, you know. And there I was again, you know, I'm drunk, trying to sober up and trying to get sober. I mean, you know, I had to get sober. I knew it. I knew I was going to die. You know, and that was the bottom line. I was going to die. I knew it at the age of 24. And I needed help, so I did ask my union for some help. And I got some help, and it was the first time I ever asked for help. And the guy on the other end of the phone said, "Can you quit drinking just for today?" And I'm like, "That's a stupid question. Anybody could stop drinking for today, but I said, I don't think I can quit for a week. But he said, "Don't worry about the week." He says, "Why don't you just quit for today?" And I did quit for the day, and he says, "I'll get you help." He got me into detox the next day, and I thought I was at like a country, I was going to a country club. He says, "You're going to detox." And I'm excited. I'm like, wow, I don't know if anybody's been to detox. But if you haven't been to detox, let me tell you, it's not like a country club. On the way going there, I said, like, "Is there swimming pools?" He said, "No." "Is there tennis courts?" He said, "No. I'm going to a Vancouver detox." And I didn't have a clue. I didn't even know where I was going. I was so sick. I was like 100 pounds. I was going to detox. And I was actually putting down my sponsor, who turned out to be my sponsor. I was actually putting him down. I said, like, he only made like just, I don't know how much he made. Let's say he made only 20,000 at that time, and I maybe made 50,000 at that time. I don't know. But I said, how can you live? I remember arguing with him all the way to detox. How can you live on $20,000 a year? Like, that's almost impossible. He said, "Well, I got a pretty amazing life, and I'm driving you to detox. So you better think about what you're saying here." And, you know, it made all the sense in the world. So I did go to detox, and I got help. And when I was sitting there, I knew nothing about AA. And when I was sitting there, you know, I was smoking in the rooms in detox. And people were going somewhere for an hour, and they were coming back super happy. Like, they were, like, super happy. And I'm like, "Where did you guys come back from?" And they said, like, "To an AA meeting." And I'm like, "What's an AA meeting?" And they all just drove me nuts because they were so positive. So, you know, if I'm pissing you off, you know how it feels, because I got pissed off too. You know, I was miserable. I was lonely. I hurt. I was in so much pain. I couldn't bear to live most days out of my life. I couldn't even bear another day. And here I am stuck in detox with these happy people and AA meeting they mentioned. That was it for me. I phoned up my sponsor, the guy who was helping me, and I said, "I want out of here now. I'm packing up my stuff." He says, "Well, how about don't leave, but I'll come and pick you up." He had special privileges at that time to go to detox, and because he was part of the union, and he knew everybody in detox. So he actually picked me up and took me out of detox. This is my first day in detox. He actually took me out of detox that night. And it was about 7 o'clock that night. He took me out of detox and he brought me to my first AA meeting over 25 years ago at the Vancouver Recovery Club. And I remember sitting at the back, and I remember hearing somebody up here at the front here, and they're talking about hope, and they're talking about not drinking one day at a time. And they go like, "Look, if I can do this, you can do this." And that's what I got from the very first meeting. I got hope. And I never had hope before. I knew what it was like to be in pain. I knew what it was like to be depressed. I knew what it was like to live in fear. And the fear, I can even remember him asking me, and I fell in love with the meeting. And I remember, you know, I loved it so much, we hung around for another meeting, the 11 to midnight that night. And then I went back to detox and I drove them crazy. But when we went back, driving back to detox, he asked me, I remember that night, he says, "How much fear is running through your body right now? How much fear?" I'm like, "Oh, 99.9% fear is running through my life." And then I asked him, I said, "How much fear is running through you?" He says, "Maybe 5%. I'm like, "Oh my God, do I want that?" Well, that guy ended up being my sponsor. And, you know, I stayed at detox for a while. I got brought to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I fell in love with these rooms. I fell in love with the people. Like, we give you hope here. You know, I know what brought each and every one of you here tonight. You know, and I know what brought you here. It was God that brought you here. And you're going to hear God, and you're going to cringe like I did. And, you know, and I'm going to explain, you know, what I know about the 12 steps, and like really quickly, because I only got about 15 more minutes. But, you know, I know that your heart and God brought you here tonight. And that's what brings me to Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's what keeps me here in Alcoholics Anonymous is God and my heart and prayer and doing the work. You know, but I didn't know that. So I came to AA, I fell in love with AA, and I hung out with AA, and I did what the AA things did. I joined the group, and I've had three groups since I've joined AA, and my first group was the Maritime group for 12 years. Then it was, that was a Tuesday night. Then it was the Bay group on Monday night, Martin remembers. And I was there for 12 years, and now it's Who Me Saturday mornings. And I've just kept falling in love with AA. But what happened was this, you can fall in love with the fellowship, and you can. Like, you're probably really getting energized, because I get energized by the meetings and by people talking about the 12 steps. It just lightens me up. It just brings me closer to God, and I'm just light enlightened, right? But when I leave here, and when I left here, things weren't so enlightened at that point. I was crazy. Try hanging around these rooms and not understanding what an alcoholic is. Try hanging around these rooms on just pure faith. How about that? Just pure faith. And you know what? Chances are you're probably not going to make it. Right? Because faith is only half of it. And if faith was all of it, we'd all be in a church right now. But we're not. Right? If faith was all of it, if it was all of it, Dr. Bob would have been sober even today, but he couldn't stay sober on faith alone. And he was a really religious guy. So faith alone is only half of it. The other half is the course of action. It's the action that we need to take, and that's the 12 steps. So I needed to know what an alcoholic was. And you could have bet me, if anybody's new here, you're going to listen to this. Just hear me out here. I would have bet you anything that the problem was alcohol. Here, can I just use this for a second? That's alcohol. And if that was alcohol, that's the problem. And I would have bet anybody that that's the problem. But it's not. And it's not. It's only a symptom of the problem. So if the alcohol is only a symptom of the problem, what's the problem? And the problem is my thinking. Because my thinking gets me to that alcohol. And that's bad news. That's bad news if you got an alcoholic mind like I do. And you do, if you're an alcoholic. And it tells us that. It tells us, like, you know, it tells us if you can't control the amount that you can take, right? And if you cannot stop entirely, you're an alcoholic. You're suffering from an illness which only a spiritual solution could fix. The main problem of the alcoholic is my thinking. It's not the alcohol. It's my thinking. So my thinking's screwed. Right? Something happens before you even think about alcohol. So there's the alcohol. I'm not even thinking about it. But something happens before I even think. Before I even start thinking about it. And it's called the spiritual malady. And I don't know if you guys know about that, but Dr. Silkworth talks about it in The Doctor's Opinion. And he talks about, like, you know, you're not going to know the difference between the truth and the false. And what does he mean by that? He's talking about the difference between the truth and the false. The truth has always been within me. And it's in my heart. And it's in God. And it's in my heart. But the lying was always with me too. And that's my thinking. So what got in the way of me being that good guy? Me always reacting with love. Me doing the right things is my head and my defects of character and my thinking, right? So so what happens is Dr. Silkworth, he explains the spiritual malady, and they mention it on page 52. But he also says we get kind of like a warning sign. So we get a warning sign before I even think about drinking. And that's that spiritual malady. But what's the warning? It's irritable, restless, discontent. That's what that is. And what that is that irritable, restless, discontent means you're in spiritual pain. And it means you're going to feel it. Doesn't mean you're happy. Doesn't mean you're like spiritual. It means the complete opposite. Right? And they explain it on page 52. But it all starts with that irritable, restless discontent. I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know. I don't know what to do. I'm going to drink. Because that's my solution. It's always been my solution. And it will always be my solution unless I change my solution. So my problem is my thinking. That's the first step. Then we get to the second step, is I need a new solution because my solution is to drink. And if I've got a mind that's killing me, what am I going to do? I need a solution. I need a new solution in my life to help me stay sober. I need that solution. Somebody give it to me. I would have paid you anything for that solution. Give it to me. I sat in the rooms and nobody was talking about the solution. They're going like, God, 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 God. I'm like, come on, help me here. And it told me on page 25, because I study the big book, and it says, our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a place which is indeed miraculous. So the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me exactly where the solution is. Not who the solution is, but where the solution is. And the solution has always been within me. And it's always been in my heart. It's always told me the truth. But my mind got in the way of that. Right? So I have a new solution in life. That's not listening to my head. That's by living in my heart, by prayer, and living within me. And listening to that truth. Right? So, will I drink? Honestly, will I drink today? If I'm spiritually okay, here's the answer. The answer is no. I've never seen anybody out there drinking when they're spiritually okay. I haven't. Help others. You know, pray. You know, help another person. Right? You know, I had to get out of this mind. So I'm out of my mind. I have a new solution. It's in my heart and prayer. And that's part of steps 2 and 3. And you would think this would be enough to keep me sober. Okay, I got it now. I'm not going to think. I'm going to listen to my heart. I'm going to listen to the truth. And no matter what my mind says, I'm not going to listen to it. I'm going to listen to my heart. You would think that would be enough to keep you sober, but it won't. I guarantee it won't. Because that's just faith alone. And faith alone won't do it. Even though they wrote this book to enable you to power greater than yourself, we still need to do the rest of the work. So just because you're close to your heart, you're not going to stay there. And I'm going to tell you why you're not going to stay there. Because we're going to go to Alcoholics Anonymous, and you're going to hear loud guys like me, and you're not going to like me. So you're going to probably judge me. I've done it. I would hate the loud, positive guy if I was here dying in these rooms. And I'm not loud and positive to drive you crazy. But it would drive me crazy. It would. Because it's really hard sitting in these rooms and not understanding. I totally get that. And I'm here to help. Believe me, I'm here to help. So why am I not going to stay sober? I know what the problem is my thinking. I know where the solution is. It's in my heart and it's prayer. It's because of my defects of character. I've been always reacting. It's my defects of character. I'm always reacting by what I think. I know. But there's the problem. If you're reacting by what you think, you're in trouble. If you react from what you know, you're still in trouble. We don't react from what I think or from what I know. We just react with love today. We go right to the solution. Right? I have an analogy. I have this 50-inch TV. It breaks. I'm irritable, restless, discontent right away. I go and take my TV and I go get it fixed. I have enough money. I go get it fixed. It's across the street. Okay? So they fix my TV. I get my TV, and remember, I'm irritable, restless, discontent. I'm making sure I have enough money. I'm irritable, restless, discontent. They fix my TV. I get my TV back. 3 months down the road, my TV breaks again. What's the first thing that happens? Am I irritable, restless, discontent? No. I'm not, because I know what the solution is. The solution is to take my TV across the street to get it fixed. They fixed it. They gave it back to me. I'm taking it back to the TV repair place. So what the analogy really is no matter what the problem is, and I like put on like workshops of the 12 steps, and I've asked everybody in the audience, do you got any problems? Oh my God, I got problems. Do you got problems? Yes. I've asked everybody. Last time I had like 50 people. They all said they had problems. Now I said, ask me, do I have a problem? And the answer is no. Why would I have a problem? Because I have a solution. I go straight to my heart. I go straight to God. I go straight to the solution. I'm not in the problem. I'm not here. I'm not here anymore. Thank God I'm here. And that's because of the rest of the work. I have my moments and everything else, just like everybody else. But do you know what? I go straight to the solution today. So now I have to do my step four, and I have to deal with these resentments and these fears and sex and the harms. I have to deal with this stuff. And it's not by what you think. So if anybody tells you to do a step four and you should be thinking, they're telling you to do it wrong. Fearless and thorough moral inventory has nothing to do with thinking. It has to do, if things are reoccurring in your life, and if they're taking any part of your head, write them down. That's it. And let's just spiritually try to fix this later. Then we do five, then we do six and seven. And you know, what I found with six and seven were, is by the time I finish step five, I know exactly what all my defects are at this point. So why do we have defects of character? And I've been going through this work a long time, and I help many people through this work. And this is just my opinion. You could take it or leave it. But why we have defects of character is because God wants us closer to God. So whatever you're doing, God wants you to do the opposite. So if you're stealing, God wants you to do the opposite. Only if you're in the way of you, God, and others. So maybe me being loud would be okay as long as it's maybe helping somebody. But if it's not, it's wrong. Right? Whatever defect of character you are, if it's stealing, if it's being mean, if it's being inconsiderate, if it's being whatever it might be, God wants you to have those defects of character to show you that on the other side of that is God's will. And that's where I want you. And that's why we have defects of character. I believe it's to get closer to God. Right? And then we have steps eight and we have step nine. And you know, I'm going to talk I know I only have a few more minutes. Step nine is really important. And when we get to step nine, we have to make amends. And everybody talks about making amends. And I don't want to make amends. I don't want to make amends either. At that point, I don't. How and why would I ever come to somebody I don't like? Doesn't even make sense to me. Right? How would and why would I come to you and go like, oh, geez, you know, I was wrong, you know. Why would I do that if I don't do something first? I need to do something before I come to you. And that's to make amends to me. And I need to make amends to me. And I need to know what that looks like. And I needed that to be structured. And then I needed to know exactly what to do to make amends to me. And I knew the number one thing I needed in my life was forgiveness. And I didn't know what forgiveness looks like. I didn't know how to deal with that, right? I needed to forgive me because there's no way I can come to you if I can't forgive me. So I needed to do something and I needed to follow people and I needed other people to tell me how they did this. And what I've learned is if you react with love is the best forgiveness you can get in your life. So me reacting with love in every single situation today forgives me. And it's good to me. And so what does that look like? That might be going to meetings. That might mean finishing these 12 steps. That might mean phoning my sponsor. That might mean being considerate today. Being loving today, being on that opposite side now, being closer to God, being, you know, that kind, loving person as much as I can today, right? Living in God's will today, you know, and that's how I got the forgiveness. And then at that point there, I'm okay. I am okay. I can love me today, and I can react with love in everything I do today. I could sure try my hardest. Right? Now I can come to you, and regardless of what I've said to you, regardless of what I've done to you, I can come to you with my open heart, and hopefully you'll have an open heart at that point too, and now my heart can reach your heart, unless your mind's in the way. And hopefully your mind's not in the way, but my heart now can reach your heart. And I can say, hey, look, do you know what? I was wrong. Maybe I should have walked with you. Maybe I shouldn't have talked bad about you. Maybe I should have paid you. And how can I just make this spiritually right and spiritually okay? That's all. And then step 10 is done all through the day. You hear people, I just heard it the other day. Somebody said to me, text me, I just did my step 10 tonight. And I said, you didn't do step 10. Text me back, yes, I did. I said, no, you didn't. He said, I just did my step 10 tonight just before I went to bed. And I said, no, you didn't. Step 10 is done all through the day. Right? So if you're telling me you did step 10 just before you go to bed, you're doing it wrong. You're doing step 11 when we retire at night. We answer those 9 questions. And they're really important questions. Page 85 to 88. We got 9 questions. We answer them. Right? And on the awakening, we go on the awakening. That's step 11. And then it brings us to step 12. Step 12 is if we're not helping others through this work, what are you doing? How am I giving this gift back to others? Am I maybe taking them to meetings? I think it's great. I did it for years, but I stayed crazy. I volunteered and did commitments for my group, but I stayed crazy. So step 12 for me today is helping others through this work so you can have the gift of love from your heart so you can pass it on to others. This is what this is all about, right? So how can I help you today? It's definitely by taking you through the steps. And you know what? If I'm a little bit too loud, there's a few here that I know that can help you and love you and walk with you. I'm serious. And you know, if I can help anyone at any time, I will. I don't care if you're a girl. I don't care if you're a guy. I don't care if you're from out of town. I don't care what color you are. I don't care how young you are. I don't care how old you are. I want the hand of AA to always be there. And for that, I am responsible. Thanks for my sobriety.